You're listening to the Cup of Joe Morning Show podcast, hosted by Joe Hunter on the Sound of Life at soundoflife.org.
I got a hold of Rachel Macy Stafford from the book Only Love Today. Don't let that scare you, though, but some really pretty cool practical, a very practical thing. 6 seconds, right? 6 seconds. Just goes not that fast, but 6 seconds. In 6 seconds, you can make eye contact. In 6 seconds, you can hold open a door. In 6 seconds, you can wait for a little straggler to catch up. I'll wait for you. You can even say it in 6 seconds. In 6 seconds, you can take a deep breath. I don't know about you, but I need more of those. In 6 seconds, you can let it go. You can even say it. It's not worth it. In 6 seconds, you can tuck a note in a lunchbox or in a pocket. It takes 2 seconds to draw a heart. Yes. In 6 seconds, you can say you're sorry. In 6 seconds, you can cut yourself some slack. In 6 seconds, you can throw away that picture, that pair of pants, that inner bully that keeps you from loving this day, this you. In 6 seconds, you can feel the sunshine. In 6 seconds, you can decide it's time to stop looking back. In 6 seconds, you can whisper, it's going to be okay, to yourself or someone who's scared.
Shazam.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
The Sound of Life.
Well, I sat down and spent a little time watching some college baseball, and I realized that around here, college sports kind of gets lost with all the, you know, in the land of pro sports, and the NBA is going full strong, whatever. Anyway, so I just happened to see a game that was on Saturday. Was it Saturday? Yeah. Baseball World Series is going on. It kind of goes on forever because they play the best out of three. So there could possibly be three games just with, you know, two different teams there. So I saw, first of all, I should preface this by saying that my dad went to North Carolina State College, as it was called then, fought in World War II, interrupted that, but his two brothers went there. My aunt, his sister, taught there, or not, she didn't teach there, I'm sorry, she worked in the chemistry department as a secretary, but she worked there forever at North Carolina State University, and they were playing, and I was very surprised that they were playing. Because I knew they'd gotten beat by Duke in the ACC tournament. So I didn't even know if they were in the tournament. They're in what they call a super regional. And they were out playing in Arkansas against Arkansas. And I looked and, you know, the score's pretty good. It's like 2-1, something like that. And middle of the game. And I noticed that Arkansas had the number 1 out beside their name. And North Carolina State didn't have any number beside their name. Now, I'm saying this to encourage you today. Okay, I'm just the only reason I'm telling you this story, especially kids, and especially kids in sports. Okay, so I thought Arkansas, are they number 1? You know, what do I know? I don't know anything. So yeah, I Googled them. Oh yeah, they're number 1 in the country, right? And North Carolina State, they didn't have a number. It's okay, kids, if you don't have a number. Believe me, it's okay. It's okay if you start the season 1-8. Like North Carolina State did. It's okay if you lose the tournament to Duke. It's okay if you go in to play the best out of three against the number 1 team in the nation and you lose the first game 20-2. 20-2. That happened. Arkansas, like, get out of here with this. Don't come in here with this no ranking, you know, number 1 team in the country. Come on our field thinking you're going to play us. Get out of here. How do you come back from that? The coach, they asked the coach, what do you say after that? He said, you say nothing. And I thought, that's pretty smart, actually. You know, they know. They know. They've been playing all year. They know. You know. So they won the second game by a run. And the game yesterday evening, they were ahead. And then it was tied going into the 9th inning. And they hit a home run and went one ahead. Arkansas is the home team. They did not score. And North Carolina State is going to Omaha instead of the number 1 team in the country. I'm sorry if you're a Razorback fan. But Arkansas has the number 1 pitcher in the country. He's allowed 5 home runs all year. His name is Kopp, K-O-P-P. He allowed 3 yesterday. North Carolina State has a kid from near my hometown in High Point, Chris Velleman. He's a freshman. He's out there pitching against his all-star lineup. And he's throwing the ball over 95 miles an hour. I said, wow, this guy's something else. I mean, you know, it's just it was just a real thrill and an amazement. And I thought, that's a real lesson right there. I mean, just the adversity, the parts. I mean, it's almost like a Rocky movie, isn't it? I mean, come on.
Quickly, before it's too late, press the superhero button.
Be encouraged today.
The Cup of Joe Morning Show with Joe Hunter.
Might as well get up, do something.
The sound of life.
By now, you probably heard about the lobster diver that got swallowed by a whale. Man, that's a story that you don't hear much of anymore. I'll tell you that. Commercial lobster diver. Him and his buddy there who was on the boat, he said, I just keep following the bubbles, you know, to make sure he's okay. And then the bubbles stopped. And I guess the guy on the boat said he thought it was, they all feared a shark. Of course, that was what they always feared. And Michael Packard said that he thought that's what it was. But he said, I didn't feel any teeth or anything, you know, coming into me. So it was very strange. He was saying at the Cape Cod Hospital, it was a humpback whale is what it was, and it did indeed swallow him whole. And yes, that may be.
That's the worst,
that
really.
That may be the worst. It's right up there, I'm sure of that. He said he was in the whale's mouth. He figures for about 30 seconds. The thing was, he had his breathing apparatus on, stuff like that. And he said he started to shake the head of the whale. And he said, I didn't feel any pain or anything, you know, but he said, I kept thinking about my kids, and I'm like, oh, man, you know, and it's just after 30 seconds, obviously, the whale came up to the top, and you know what that's like, right? And you spit him out. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Kind of an interesting encounter there. I don't know. You know, first question I would say, is there some place you're like supposed to go that you feel that God is leading you to go to and then you're not? I don't think that was the case. I think it was just the case of mistaken identity. The whales dive down and then open their mouths wide open and get fish, and then they come up and then all the water drains out their gills, if I got that right. And then they have the fish, and then thankfully, he realized, you know, like a kid eating broccoli. Spit him right out. That's
a great way to start your day.
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Cup of Joe Morning Show. The sound of life.
Harriet Beecher got married to Harriet. She was Lyman Beecher's daughter, right? And then Harriet Beecher got married to Mr. Stowe. So she's known as Harriet Beecher Stowe, very famous writer and abolitionist. Once said, the truth is the kindest thing we can give folks in the end. The truth. So what I'm going to tell you is truth based on what some woman did recently. Not a woman, but the man did it. But the woman captured it. In a photograph, and it's at a wedding. So if you've got a wedding groom coming up, I don't care how much cryptocurrency you have, leave the phone in the car. That's all I'm saying. Those things have caused more embarrassment and more strange things that happen just about to everybody who's got one when they really wish they shouldn't have one. Right. So this woman uploaded a seemingly heartwarming video to social media, and it's her name is Taylor, and she posted a clip on the TikTok, and it shows her husband on their wedding day as he stood at the altar standing in a blue suit. He's trimmed beard. He's got a wild beard, but it's trimmed for the wedding, and watching as the bride walks down the aisle. The now viral video then shows him whip out his phone during the pinnacle wedding ceremony moment. And she said, why did you do that? And he said, and I quote, cause crypto never sleeps. Their value and price fluctuate every second of the day, and people who have a bit of money invested in it, like a Bitcoin or Ripple, love to show what their coin is doing. That's what he said, I guess. And I know from someone who lives very close to me who has some, I guess, because he's always looking at it to see. Really, you know, when you think that there can't be enough interruptions, something else comes along that's like, oh, that's got to be the ultimate interruption right there. What is wrong with you? That's why I will say this, and it's not fair. Yeah, this is what you're saying.
Houston, we have a problem.
Houston, we have a problem right here. I guess because I'm an old curmudgeon, it's easier for me to leave the phone in the car. Whenever I go someplace, it's fine. And people say, well, that's the reason I can never get in touch with them.
Waking up with a cup of Joe.
You make my drive to work so worth having. Thank you for the entertainment, the music, the love, the blessings.
The Cup of Joe Morning Show, the sound of life.
I realize that everybody knows about Airbnb, right? You may know that they're offering a dozen people a chance to live 10 months remotely in short-term rentals as part of a new Live Anywhere on Airbnb program. So I didn't know you'd get so excited about that. But short-term rental platform covers the cost of accommodation. They provide transportation allowance. And if you're interested, you apply online at their airbnb.com/liveanywhere. You don't have to write it down or anything. I'm going to post the article for you on the Cup of Joe Morning Show Facebook page, right? It's open to the end of the month, so maybe you want to get, you know, apply for it or enter it, or whatever you want to do. I posted the article right there for you. So, and I realize that I'm just giving them advertisement, kind of, but I posted the article on the Cup of Joe Morning Show Facebook page, so that was kind of an unabashed way to get you to check out the Cup of Joe Morning Show Facebook page as well.
Waking up with a cup of Joe.
I can't stop drinking the coffee. I've stopped doing the standing and the walking and the words putting into sentence doing.
The sound of life.
Well, you may be taking an exotic Spanish vacation this summer. I don't know. Things are breaking loose, right? You may be in the northwest Spanish town of Estrada, and you may be walking along the sidewalk there in this quaint little town. I'm saying it is. The only thing I've seen in the town is the bench that was made for personally made for a man's wife to sit on. And you may look at it and go, that seems kind of out of place, but that's a fine bench. May I sit on that? That's what you're going to be thinking. It's just a street there in the northwest Spanish town. His name is Manuel. He's 82 years old. He and his wife go for a walk. She's 79, Maria. And she has osteoarthritis. And she walks with a stick, and her morning exercise increasingly difficult. And so they lobbied the local town council to install benches along their usual route and didn't come up with anything. So he says, I'm making it. And he said, you know, I made this. And it really is impressive when you look at it and think, he said, I did it in about a half an hour. And it's really very good. I would be very proud to rest my bones on your bench, my weary bones. It's pretty amazing. We all need some type of a place that we can rest our weary bones, don't we? It's really kind of cool there. It's pretty amazing, and I bet you a lot of people take advantage of it, including your wife. And I wish you guys well. Pretty cool right there.
Quickly, before it's too late, press the superhero button.
A great way to start your day. The Cup of Joe Morning Show.
Look, I'm a frequent coffee drinker. I'm part of the club. I have a card.
The sound of life.
I had a very amazing experience yesterday afternoon getting home and coming down my little road. You know, I turn off of Route 9. Everybody's got to be on 9 at some point, right? At some 9 or something or other. So I turn off of that. It's a pretty busy road. And after a few miles, I turn off of that. And, dinky little road. Not bad. They redid it last summer. It's nice. And then I turn off into the little road with a few houses on it that's really a dirt driveway, kind of, you know. And so I got there, and there's tree work going on. It seems to be more tree work around the neighborhood than I ever remember at any time. But maybe that's a good thing. That's actually a good thing. The tree companies are contracted out by power company, and they go along, you know, anything that's, as you know, they're going to affect the power lines. They cut it down. Boy, they cut a lot of stuff. So there's a truck out on the road with all the cones up and things. It corrects me if they put the cones up. Like, you know, in case you can't see that big truck sitting there, you know, there's work going on, you know. But then there's one sitting in the road that I can't get in. So I'm like, oh. So I see my neighbor, and I made a gesture, kind of threw my hands up. He's parked over on the side there, except he wasn't in the vehicle. So I realized after about an hour that he had walked home and then walked back. So I went down the road and I turned around and I'm looking, you know, a quarter of a mile down the road. It's a beautiful scene. I got an opportunity to sit there and look at it. There's a lake there, beautifully cut grass. I was watching the mama duck and how she would protect her other two. I don't know why she let them stay across the road, and every time a car would come, she would run out in the road and stop the car and then make sure and then walk across and make sure that her young ones were okay eating the grass there, and the car would slowly go on by. Then she would go back across the other side of the road. And, you know, 10 minutes later, here comes another car around. That's a pretty sharp turn, so they're going slow anyway. And she'd run back out there. It's fascinating. And I thought, wow. So then I said, all right, that's enough. And I went up and got closer, not to any avail whatsoever. Got to talk to a neighbor, meet a neighbor, met him, Vinny, on his lawnmower. He's, you know, we're out in the middle of the road. I said, you know, you're in the country when you can sit there in the middle of the road talking to a neighbor on a lawnmower. This is the way it is, you know. Beautiful scene and everything. Learned about where he worked, all this kind of stuff. Well, I better let you go, he kept saying. I thought, that's kind of a funny statement, considering I don't have any way to go, you know. So, and I creep a little bit closer. I'm thinking, you know, I can't squeeze by anyway. So then my other neighbor comes, a neighbor that I knew, and she comes wheeling in, and I wave, and she turns around with purpose. You know, she turned around and took off the other direction, and I'm like, where's she going? I really thought that. I thought she's going somewhere. You know, there was no doubt in her mind. Well, it had to be another half hour later. I mean, I sat there a while. But it was really an educational experience. It really was let's just sit, and you can't do anything now, you know, and you're just going to sit and contemplate. It's very interesting. I highly recommend it. I mean, you don't see them coming. That's probably the best thing. But then finally, when the truck moved and I pulled in, there's her car sitting in her driveway. And so, oh, and in the meantime, I had taken a FedEx box. They couldn't get up in there, so they left me the box, and my name is on that. So hopefully it gets to the person. It's really wild, you know, but it's just one of those things about being in a country neighborhood, you know. I said, I hate for these people not to get the FedEx that they're supposed to get today, you know, so I'll take the responsibility. It's okay. But then I go up there and I said, how in the world did you get in here? I'm all like talking with a high voice like that and stuff like that. So she told me the shortcut, which it does involve going through a yard, but it's her yard. But she said, you have my permission. If you can't get in this little road sometime, you can go in the back way. You just go on that house, you go to the right, just keep on going into the back, go through the back, cut across in the middle of the woods, come through my yard. And it was like, okay, well.
Waking up with a cup of Joe.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Rise and shine.
The sound of life.
Speaking of say I won't, boy, Nick. And people, somebody said, tell me I won't and watch me do it. Of course, he comes from a long line of wire walkers. I believe that's the terminology. Nick, is it Valinda or Nick Walinda? I don't know which way. It's spelled with a W, but I think traditionally in the old country, it's Nick Walinda, I think. And of course, a very famous family. And they have met great tragedy in doing that. As you may say, well, hello. I mean, it's incredible. Today is a big anniversary because today is the day that he tightroped, he walked the wire over Niagara Falls. I watched it. And you probably did too. A lot of people did. That was his seventh world record. That's not why he does it. somebody said, don't look down, and he took their advice. He didn't. I did look down, and I went, oh, man. I mean, when he's out there in the middle of that, and the difference, you know, that thing is not, like, level across. That thing goes, it goes, the wire is looping just because of the weight of it across. And all that is, he has since, of course, walked across the Grand Canyon at a point. I'm trying to think. I know we did the volcano where you had to have the breathing mask on and stuff. That was, I don't know. He was actually doing a walk. Oh, then he did one. Well, he did the, in New York City, Chicago, tall buildings right in the middle of town. I don't know. It's very interesting. But when he was doing one of those, and I can't remember which one it was, you could clearly hear him singing like one of the songs that we play, one of a very popular worship song. And I was like, wow. And then, you know, he's basically telling, and sometimes he's just words. He's reaffirming what he believes. Now, I'd be the first to tell you that something like that would put the fear of God into you. I mean, if there ever was. But he knows what he's doing. They wanted him, I guess ABC, who televised the walk. How long has it been? 11 years? Is that what it is? 11 years. Over Niagara Falls, said they wanted him to have a tether in case he fell. People wouldn't be watching this man fall. And he said, I'm not going to fall. That's why I'm going to do it, you know. And you have to have that kind of confidence, don't you? You know, he said, just having a tether just gives me something else to think about, and I don't want something else to think about. Believe me, I'm not going to. He said, I got to figure it out. He said, if the wind happened and was really bad, something catastrophic happened, believe me, I could hold on to that wire by the time a helicopter could get me. So, you know, I thought, yeah, it makes sense, right? Yeah, he's good. And then I'm watching him do it, and my palms are sweating. You know, I'm just, like, praying for him. But he was giving an interview, as he always does, after that, talking about his faith. Nick. Well,
you know, in the Word, it says that God provides a peace that passes all understanding. And me staying calm and peaceful before I get on that wire is very important. If I were to overly stress out, I would actually overcompensate for winds, which actually causes you to come off the wire rather than stay on that wire. So it's important that I'm calm and peaceful, and I find a lot of peace from my provider. And I hope that what I do inspires others, not to walk a wire in the Windy City, but inspires others that the impossible is possible if you work hard enough.
A great way to start your day. The Cup of Joe Morning Show.
So I discovered that we were about out of water here at the Sound of Life. We get these 5-gallon jugs. We go buy them and put them on top of the cooler. And I looked and I went, oh, I meant to mention it to the boss on Friday. And I forgot and all that. So then I finally messaged her and she said, well, we get them at Lowe's if you want. You can go, you know, take the empty ones and all that. So I thought, okay, I'll do it. It's okay. I'll do it. And then I thought, well, wait a minute. I've got to get a spool of twine for the weed whacker, right? So I thought I was going to go somewhere else, and I thought, well, I'll just go. It's at Lowe's. So I'll just order it. I'll be really cool because I'll order it, and then it'll be in one of those lockers they have out front now. I've already experienced that a little bit. She walked me through how to do that. I'm like, yeah, I can't wait till next time, man. So it turns out I found a 5-gallon jug of water that we have. So we don't have that emergency anymore. So I can wait a week or so. So I thought, well, I need to get the weed whacking material, right? Otherwise, my son won't weed whack. So anyway, but I thought this would be a snap. I'll just pull up, pull right in the stripe section, hit the flashers, run in 10 seconds tops. You know, because what you do is it gives you an email and it has a barcode on it, and you scan it, boom, the locker pops open, you grab a package, you're out of there. And I had all that in my mind. I couldn't wait to do that. And I'm standing there scanning and it's not reading. Man, there ain't nothing like that. It is modern day, standing there scanning and it's not reading. And so then it said, put the numbers in manually. I did that about 18 times. No. A couple times anyway. And I looked inside and the customer service line, and I went, oh, wow. Turns out, I think for pickup, it wasn't really the customer service line. But, man, these stores, I mean, you know, Lowe's, Home Depot, they are just a zoo. It's amazing. Mondays, like, and the people that work there say, yeah, come by on the weekend. I'm like, I don't dare if I can help it. So anyway, I'm outside trying it again. I didn't know what to do. And I was pretty frustrated. And a man who came in, he said, yeah, nothing not working, right? And let me see. Can I see your phone? And I was like, he said, I work here. I said, oh, okay. He was coming back from lunch. And he took, he said, yeah, he said, that's not in a locker. He said, what you ordered is not in a locker. He said, I'll give you a notification at a locker pickup. I said, oh, I just looked at the email and thought, hey, here it is, you know, because it would fit in a locker. He said, I'll grab it for you. He said, it won't take but a second. He said, follow me. Went there and he grabbed it out of the bucket. And you do the thing where you touch the phones and all this. And it's like, it worked, you know. And so I said, well, my customer service experience went from like, you know, a 0 to 10. I appreciate that. Coming back from lunch and jumping on, seeing that I was frustrated and all that. I thought that was really pretty cool. But it just shows you, you know, that's why you get so frustrated, isn't it? You've got this in your mind how it's going to work, and then it's not working. Right. Sometimes that thing is just, you're scanning the barcode, and it's just sitting there.
Totally. Yeah.
Your daily dose of encouragement.
I've got a smile on my face. And a twinkle in my eye.
The Cup of Joe Morning Show. The sound of life.
I'm kind of dismayed because it was a news report within the last couple of days talking about, and here it comes, I'm going to throw it out there. I mean, because I've been reading about, and it's, I don't understand it, to tell you the truth. I understand what some people are going through. I don't understand what they've said. Voices in their head. Mandisa's one of them. You can be in glory tonight. All this can be done. All this trouble, all this heartache can be done away with right now. That's what she was hearing. I don't know what others have, but many people have been going through with it. And they've been church leaders and pastors, young people. It's, I mean, our young folks, it's terrible. It's really, they take their own life. Incredible. And I've been just reading about things that people are commenting on, you know, relatively simple things that people have jumped on them and said certain things to them. And they, the people that say that, they just think you're laughing along with them. But you're not. You're crying. You're dying inside. So, you know, it's a tough, it's an incredibly tough situation to know what to do. Almost... I know it's going to sound real simple, but Augustine, back in the era, back in the day, Augustine didn't have a lot to work with for counselors and stuff, and he basically said that. But he said what he did have to work with, maybe this will help you. He said, I have read in Plato and Cicero sayings that are wise and very beautiful, but I have never read either of them. Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, which of course is from Jesus, that invitation. That's it.
Reaching the heart of the Northeast, the sound of life.
One said just yesterday, he said, not only did Jesus not make it in time to Lazarus, he missed the funeral and everything. You know, they had every right to be. Don't tell me you wouldn't be fussing at him. Oh, man, if you'd have been here. Aren't we like that sometimes? We just go on and on, right? We're just like, we know, right? And then isn't it something when God comes through? See, I'm like that. I get on my high horse and I get all upset about things and stuff, you know. And then God just puts somebody right in my way. That guy at Lowe's, he said he just got back from lunch. How do I know? He probably could have been an angel. I have no idea. But I mean, you know, it just changed my whole experience and helped me out and just made me seem like, what are you doing? Relax, let go of it, you know. But I always get that every time I get on that, I, you know, and then God just kind of shows me, you know, just let it go. It's, I got this. It's not that big a deal, you know. I'll take care of you. It's all right. It's okay. Imagine the how stunned they were when Lazarus walked out. Oh, okay, you got this. I see, Jesus, I see. You're the resurrection.
The sound of life.
This is written by a young lady named Roz. When I was growing up, my father, oh, and it's also the anniversary, least I forget, of the first roller coaster in America, opened, of course, in Coney Island, the year way back in 1884. Nowadays, we hear about 85-foot drops and 60-mile-an-hour speeds and all that. This one would whip you around at 6 miles an hour. Well, what do you want for a nickel? You know, and it was probably that way for a long time. So Roz said, when I was growing up, my father had two pieces of advice for me. One was, if you're headed to the subway, always have your token ready in your hand. There was a time when you have to get your dad to explain it to you if you don't understand any kids about tokens. The other was, don't neglect your teeth. My dad had really bad teeth, Roz said. My father was the most anxious person I've ever known. He chained worries the way a chain smoker chains cigarettes. You know, no, what if, but, yet, this might lead to that. He chained them together. So it didn't surprise me to learn that when he and my mother and their friends went to Coney Island, back in their day, my mother and their friends would go on the parachute jump. Whee! And while my father watched from the ground. It wasn't as he was a coward. He served in the Navy in World War II. If there was a real reason to do something scary, he did it. Otherwise, decades passed. One day when I was 9, Roz said, my parents took me to Coney Island. We stood at the base of the jump. I want to go on, I said. George, you take her, Mom said. He couldn't say no. I still remember the feeling of being hoisted higher and higher on the cable and the way the seat bobbed around when the chute opened at the top. Recently, Roz said, I was going through some old junk and found my diary from 1964. Had 19 written on it, you know, already printed out. And then you just filled in the 64. September, the date was the 6th. It was a Sunday. Coney Island. Parachute jump, she wrote down. I took it. Scary. Daddy took it, too. It closed 13 days later.
A great way to start your day. The Cup of Joe Morning Show.
Oh, you look like a man who could use more coffee.
The Sound of Life.
So we're talking about the movie that's coming. It's out in theaters around the maybe in your neighborhood right now. It's called 12 Mighty Orphans, the name given to the football team by the newspaper reporter, was actually the Mighty Mites. And some interesting people in this movie. It's pretty cool. And again, it is the story of, based on true story, of an orphanage and the boys in that orphanage. This was back in the Depression era. So, you know, there wasn't anything to go around. Nobody had anything. And we're talking about rural Texas. Actually, Fort Worth, which was probably pretty rural back in the Depression era. But, you know, I was thinking about, if you haven't seen the movie, I highly recommend this movie, and I highly recommend the one that was out. It's actually on Netflix streaming, called Blue Miracle. That's based on true story, too. And that, again, is around an orphanage. Oh, I'm trying to think of the era of when it happened. Not in the Depression. It wasn't that long ago. And it takes place on the west coast of Mexico. And the orphanage, of course, is way behind. They owe money. The bank is like, oh, man, we're going to have to foreclose. We'll give you 30 days and all this. And they really did do that. They really took a chance. They lived in a town that had a very famous offshore fishing contest every year, Blue Marlin Contest. And they actually did it. One of the things I like about seeing a movie based on a true story, this particular movie, at the end of the movie, they're rolling the credits. They show the real photographs of the real people, the kids and all that, the fishermen, you know, and all that. So they really won that contest, and it paid millions, of course. And they used the money for some phenomenal things, including building up the orphanage. But I was thinking about, you know, you're like, man, there's two really faith-based movies, really inspirational movies. They're based on true stories. They happen to be around an orphanage. It was a great idea. It was one of the amazing things that came out of, shall we say, the way, the Jesus movement, you know, and people started doing things that were unprecedented in world history, providing institutions for people who were sick, people who needed help. You know, showing that because you don't have to do that. Most of the places around the world today, you know, I mean, you live in a culture where like Brad Hansen says, you know, your kid's sick, you take him to the hospital. It's, you know, but I think over the years, and that was one of them, to take care of the orphans. That's basically a command from God. He said, take care of the widows and the orphans, the fatherless. And they're in great need. And I think over the years, it was just one of those things we kind of took it for granted. Ah, they're okay. You know, we forgot about them. And so for many, many years, people, the kids, kind of became forgotten. And it's very evident in these movies. That's one of the things that's in the back of your mind, you know. And the kids know that. They know that they're, you know. I like the Blue Miracle movie because it has a twist right near the end, which is very interesting and a very unexpected, which I don't know if that really happened now, you know, in the real story. But it certainly threw a really interesting wrench into it the night before. So they got into the contest and they they were using an old boat and an old curmudgeon fisherman that had won it twice before. And somehow they got paired together. It was just one of those quirky God things. And everybody was growing together, obviously, in a very cumbersome way. And it just looked like they just didn't have any hope at all, you know. And the night before the third, you get to go out. It's 3 days. And so it's the heaviest fish in a three-day catch. So the night before, the manager of the orphanage is awakened by the fisherman. And he says, listen, here's how we're going to do it. Okay. He says, I want to help these kids. He's got a change of heart. And he had a marlin already. He said, there's a fisherman that's not in the contest. He caught this today. He said, we'll hide it under the boat. We can do that. I know we can do this. He said, how do you know we're going to get away with this? He said, because that's how I won the second one. What? He said, you cheated. He said, everybody does it. He said, they'll never find out. You'll be out there. And then he said, you distract the kids. I'll reel the thing in. I'll hook it real quick. I'll have it, you know, which is kind of sketchy anyway. But he didn't know what to do. He said, it won't be a first place fish, but it could get second or third. That's a lot of money. It'll help your orphanage. And he's just thinking about the kids. So here's the dilemma. What do you do? What are you going to do? You've got it. Okay, here's a way to get the money is that you can't send those kids back out on the street again. Do you do whatever it takes to get the money? Or do you say, you know, it's not the way? The thing that was interesting in the movie, and again, I don't know if that really happened, but he didn't know it. But one of the kids, it was new, was observing everything that was going on from the roof of the orphanage, which threw another interesting thing into. You have to watch the end of the movie because I'm not going to tell you what happened, but it's an interesting question.
Waking up with a cup of Joe.
Good morning, sunshine.
The sound of life.
I got to tell you about a couple of people that you have no idea who they are, but it's a fascinating friendship that developed and fascinating friendship with an unexpected person, really. Marge and Tammy. They meet at a Bible study meeting. Marge noticed that Tammy seemed to have they didn't have anything in common because Marge befriended her. She learned a valuable lesson from her new friend. Tammy had never been to a Bible study, and she was having a hard time understanding something the other women in the Bible study talked about. You think about what it is? That God communicated with them, something she'd never experienced. So you know what she did? She desired to hear from God, of course, and so she took action. She told Marge later on, she said, I set aside an old wooden chair, and every time I'd study my Bible, I'd ask Jesus to come sit in it. Isn't that interesting? And then she explained that whenever a verse stood out to her, she would write out the verse in chalk on the chair. It's become her special Jesus chair. And she's filled it up with God's messages to her directly from the Bible. Is that something? Marge said the Jesus chair changed Tammy's life. She's growing spiritually because scripture is becoming personal. Jesus was speaking to some Jewish believers, actually. Jesus said, if you hold to my teachings, you are really my disciples. Then you'll know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Let's hold to Jesus' teachings. whether it means writing his words on a chair, memorizing them, seeking to put them into action, right? The truth and wisdom of Christ's messages help you and me to grow in him, sets us free. He really wants us to feed off of him, really. It's a cool devotional right there from Dave Brannon. And, wow, pretty cool. Lord, help us, Lord, to connect with you more and more through the wisdom you've given to us in the Bible. And then help us to apply what we learn to help us more and more be more like Jesus. Amen. Thank you.
The Sound of Life.
My tweet in a few seconds is a very interesting, and it highlights something that I read about Dundee. What was his name? Muhammad Ali's trainer, Angelo Dundee. Now, we're going back a few years, kids. You ought to look that up. Look up that whole history. It's fascinating. Really is. But somebody wanted to know, how in the world do you train as a trainer? How do you train Muhammad Ali? And Angelo Dundee said something that's amazing. I've tried to get a hold of. It's not that easy to do, but it concerns my tweet today, which concerns things that your sons or son should know about their dad. Is this making any sense? Highlighting what you love in a person is much more effective than focusing on what you think needs improvement. Angelo Dundee said, if I wanted Muhammad Ali to bend his knees more, he would be watching film of him boxing. If I wanted him to bend his knees more, I would say to him, I like the way you bend your knees. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that much more effective? And see, he's going to remember that. Muhammad Ali, or whoever you say that to, will remember that. And ever since then, I've been walking around. You'll notice I've been really bending my knees because I think about that. Highlighting what you love in a person is much more effective than focusing on what you think needs improvement. That is huge. iMom has 5 things to say to your son about your husband. I won't go into all the details. I'm going to post this for you. Your dad is helpful. Your dad shows affection. Your dad has self-control. Your dad respects and seeks my opinion. This is mom. This is you, mom. Your dad is a great provider. Wow, that's easy. Quick. I mean, you look at it, makes sense right there. I'm just throwing it out.
The Cup of Joe Morning Show with Joe Hunter.
Oh, you're a smooth talker. You are.
The Sound of Life.
Yeah, I wanted to share something with you because, well, it's a love story. And I just want to share it with you. And I'll explain a little bit here in a minute. It is about Demi and her sister, Frangie. Frangie was born an underdeveloped cerebellum. And Demi often spoke to the media about her sister and about her love for people with special needs in her capacity. Demi, in her capacity, she spoke to the media. A man named Tim heard their story and invited Frangie, Demi, and their family to the first ever Night to Shine event. That was in South Africa, where they lived. Unfortunately, Frangie was not able to attend due to her health. But her parents volunteered as chaperones. Demi communicated with Tim to help arrange the evening. Even after that Night to Shine event came and went, its impact on Tim and Demi lasted. Their phone calls and messages continued, even before they met in person a few months later. Their conversations drifted to matters of the heart. Tim said, look below the surface. When people look at me and Demi, they say, well, he's been an athlete. She's been in pageants. Do you know how many times in the first 3 months we talked about football or baseball or pageants? I don't know if it even came up. That's what drew me to the story. What drew the couple together wasn't their accomplishments, but rather their faith and their passion to help those who are often marginalized. Tim said God really paved the way in our hearts before we ever met to have that really big link with special needs in our relationship. I am, of course, talking about Tim Tebow and the 2017 Miss Universe, now his wife, Demi Lee Nell Peters. She is from South Africa, and that's one reason she got to talk to the press a lot, talking about her sister. And I think Tim is right. God did plan a lot of that out. And now you can kind of see a little bit of it. So as they make the headlines, and Tim already in the news because he attracts the press, it is the one thing, and of course he's played college football, pro football, baseball. Somebody commented a month or so ago in the newspaper that the Mets should have kept him. Anyway, it's just good for a team to have him on the team, it seems. He has been working out with the Jacksonville Jaguars, and I saw a report a few days ago. Why they're doing this, why they're working out now, I mean, it's way early. You would think it's crazy early. You know, why not work out in the summer if you play NFL football? But he's been working out, and the report is that he fits in with the team. And the reporter said, now, you know, the players, they know who belongs on the team and who doesn't. They know who can play football. And so when the time comes for the names to be on the roster of the team, then, you know, if they know if his name should be on there or not. Absolutely. So, but when you see his name come up and you see how the media reacts to him, and I don't know what that'll be like. I'm not trying to presuppose any type of a certain point of view or anything, but it is interesting that of all the people, you know, I guess because he's what, 36, I think, something like that, and hasn't played football in a while, and he's played baseball and stuff, so, you know, there's a lot of questions right there. But the one thing that team members hate is that he attracts so much media. Why does he do that? What is it about that? You know, he's not the only Jesus follower on sports teams by any means. It's a very interesting, I think, a God thing there. So, Lord, protect him and Demi and their marriage and, you know, protect them from forces that would really love to bring them down. I'll tell you that. Thank you, Lord.
Reaching the heart of the Northeast, the sound of life.
One of the things that old people do when they get together, old curmudgeons like me do when they get together, and they talk about what they used to get in trouble for. You know, the words that we would say that would slip out at the dinner table that we would get disciplined for, and even the type of discipline and things. And it's kind of like, wow, something else, you know. Speaking of old curmudgeon, no, he's, and you'll never think of Chip Gaines as that way. Right? He's got a book out I was fascinated by, and I wanted to let you know the title of it. It's called No Pain, No Gains. Yes. The publisher must have looked and rolled their eyes and thought, that's a great idea. Basically, it is subtitled Get Uncomfortably Kind. And man, you may get a hold of this too. And Chip says, Chip Gaines, he says, we tend to think that kindness is easy. It's soft. It's nice. It's something you learn in kindergarten. How to say please and thank you and share your goldfish crackers. Kindness has gotten a rep of being kind of like Glinda the Good Witch, all gentleness and smiles. Someone with a no please after you, I insist type attitude. It's easy to think that's just not me. I'm not a pushover. I'm not constantly in a good mood. I'm not constantly patient and nice. But real kindness is built on grace and grit. And Chip says, I don't think one works without the other. They are wisely intertwined. You would know a thing or two about grace and grit, I think. Chip goes on to say, because life-changing kindness is hard. Sometimes so hard it hurts. It's sweat and effort. It actually requires something of you. That's kindness that inspires. Kindness that makes the difference. Wow. You know, the story of the widow's mite in the Bible, Jesus watched at the temple in silence as rich men made donations, some of them quite large, into the treasury. But then a poor widow placed two small copper coins in the box, barely a fraction of a penny. That's when Jesus spoke up, saying that this woman had given more than any of the others, even the richest of them, because she had made a true sacrifice. You should know that they were living in an era where the Romans would brag about their giving. And have things named after them. See, just when you think that's kind of a modern idea, it's like, no, we've been through this before. But I digress. 99% of kindness, of generosity, of fairness, of justice is follow through. It requires sacrifice. It's uncomfortable. You hold the door for an older person on their way out of the grocery store. That's kind, but when you help load their groceries into the car, even though you've already running late, that's uncomfortably kind. Teacher who gives a struggling student an extra credit opportunity, well, that's kind. Coming in early every day to go over her lessons is uncomfortably kind. If we're going to be long to one another, we need to get comfortable with being uncomfortably kind. That cool? So the book is called, and I'm not, you know, any means pushing the book. It just got my interest. Chip Gaines, No Pain, No Gains. Who would have ever thought? He would have ever thought when he had that old pickup truck and he was getting gas and, you know, just doing the fixer-upper stuff. And guy there with him said, hey, you need somebody to help you out? Sure, you know, that kind of thing. He's really a, seems to be a pretty cool guy. He's told some amazing stories and things that he's followed up on. And he knows what he's talking about. Get uncomfortably kind. Wow. No pain, no gains. There you go.
The Cup of Joe Morning Show with Joe Hunter.
Slap some bacon on a biscuit and let's go. We're burning daylight.
The Sound of Life.
Talking about Chip Gaines and his book and how learning to be kind is hard. It's hard to do, you know. And I was thinking about things are hard. Things that benefit you are hard to do. And there was a time that I watched television when I get up in the morning. And believe me, that there usually is infomercials on early in the morning. I'm talking about 3 in the morning. And the infomercials for exercise equipment, honestly, I haven't done that in years, so I don't even know what they advertise anymore, are just really kind of funny when you think about it. In a way, because everything is easy. You know, it's easy to pay for. Oh, it's so easy to store. You can fold it up and store it right in your closet, right in under the bed. And most people just leave it and hang clothes on it. But then anyway, and it's easy to do. It's so easy. 10 minutes a day, you'll be looking, you know, and all this. Didn't take long to figure out that that person probably works out more than 10 minutes a day, right? That six-pack abs on that model in Times Square, somebody was trying, said, well, if you want to look like that, you have to work out about 8 hours a day. That's kind of the way it is, you know. And so is it really worth it to be able to do that? Probably not. Most people would be like, I'm going to, you know, compromise. Well, like Dr. Tony Evans said, there's a slice of pie or two you should probably just, you know, put down. That's kind of the way, I mean, you know, a little bit of discipline there would be great. People, as Ken Davis likes to remind us, and he probably reminded his parents growing up, you know, there's no talk in the Bible about how to stay thin. No talk about working out or exercising or anything like that. And as someone so correctly pointed out, it was a workout just to stay alive in those days, all the time. And when it got dark out, yes, it was a blessing. Put your head on a rock and get some sleep because you're going to need it tomorrow to try to stay alive. That was the workout.
Amen.
Yeah.
Amen.
The Cup of Joe Morning Show with Joe Hunter.
You're as funny as a cry for help.
The Sound of Life.
It's very interesting because one of the big battles that there's always a battle going on somewhere. I mean, if you look at the history of man, you know, it's 365 days. So it was in 1815, the Battle of Waterloo. And everybody knows that name, Waterloo. I guess Napoleon Bonaparte, he was quite the general. And he lost. He got defeated by an international army under the Duke of Wellington. So that name got to be real big. But nowadays, you know, if you're going into a losing situation or you've come out of a losing, you know, that was their Waterloo, you know, which kind of means you're going to get defeated and you're never going to be the same again. I mean, that's kind of the unwritten, and that's how that kind of came about, I do believe. In 1928, Amelia Earhart became the first woman to fly across the Atlantic by airplane. So that was 1920, that was a few years after the real big hero, you know, did it. And It's interesting because it was on the same day, many years later, 1983, that Sally Ride became the first American woman in space. So was that coordinated? I mean, that's really kind of cool right there. Amelia Earhart. That was a significant thing to do and a significant achievement by a woman. And Sally Ride, you know, becoming so... I don't know. I always wondered, could that possibly be coordinated, or, you know, could only God coordinate something like that?
Waking up with a cup of Joe.
I can't imagine traveling to school every day without it. It helps me in my prayer over our school and our students and teachers. So thank you for all that you do.
The Sound of Life.
I think it's really incredible that this country actually, because of the ideals of this country, and it took a while, but what is a while? You know, how long is too long, right? That we did away with slavery, and it's being celebrated on June 19th, which is the day, if your kids are like, what does that mean? What is Juneteenth? That is the expression that was used by people who were in slavery for years to describe that day. Now, the Emancipation Proclamation came out in 1863. Abraham Lincoln signed that. It wasn't until 1866 that Union troop, federal troops rode into Galveston, Texas, and announced it to them. It took that long to get there. And so that was the last group of people who were enslaved. Now they're free. They look at that as that's really our Declaration of Independence right there. Celebrated by African American slaves being free. Celebrating Juneteenth seems pretty obvious to me. You know, it's a celebration first and foremost of ending the scourge of slavery, which had been on the world. It's a clear sign of man's fall. It's been around, you know, you read about it in the Bible. What was that, 7,000 years ago or something? And all through, in some form or another. Between countries and tribes and whatnot. And so by the ideals of the Constitution, I mean, it's an affirmation of the Constitution that really wanted it to begin with. Finally, it's a celebration of becoming a more perfect union by acknowledging our flaws and fixing them. And the process of fixing that, and that's can be quite a process. Okay, so that's the explanation, my rough and tumble explanation of Juneteenth.
You've been listening to the Cup of Joe Morning Show podcast on the Sound of Life, the Hudson Valley's 100% listener-funded Christian radio station. For more information on upcoming events, contests, to ask for prayer, and to become a member of the Sound of Life family by supporting the station, visit us at soundoflife.org.